I am Harriet Tramer, and I hope you will join me when I host Reaching for the Gold on BBS Radio. We'll discuss aging and how you, as well as those you love, can navigate your way through your maturing process and even make it an adventure. This show will be broadcast on Tuesday afternoons every other week, right at this time. It should be a chance to learn and also to be entertained. Betsy Otter Thompson has a background in many facets of the media, acting, administrative, sales. She spent 17 years in Los Angeles working as the assistant to the chairman and CEO of Castle Rock Entertainment. But despite the fact she loved all these adventures, she found a real niche writing her books, an experience she credits with helping her survive some particularly rough times. Betsy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harriet. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me on your show.
Your book, which, well, there's one of many, but the one I'm going to be discussing right now, The What Happens If I book, deals with spirituality. How would you define spirituality? What do you mean by that?
Well, I suppose I believe it's the soul in each of us. Therefore, everyone is spiritual. They may not be in touch with that spiritual side of themselves, but they are spirit. Without spirit in our bodies, what would our bodies be? They are nothing without the spirit within them. And I believe that the spirit is love, and therefore the degree to which we honor that love is the degree to which we feel that spiritual presence.
How did you come to believe that spirituality is such an important thing?
Well, to me, that's sort of like asking me why I think love is important. And I think it's important because I believe that love is my true identity, and love is all there is. I think that acknowledging the fact that we are spirit puts a little more perspective on our journey here, because everything that we see or we look at or that could be here today and gone tomorrow is an illusion. Because that's obvious after you've lived here for a little while. What was here yesterday always isn't here today. And so how can anything that is so temporary be real? So the real part of us is the part that we take with us when we leave here, which is our soul or spirit or the love we have found here.
That what you say is fascinating to me. You, as I understand, have a background in the media. Now,
yes.
This is not a negative statement, just honest. The media, sure, certain elements of it may deal with spirituality, and certain people in the media may be very involved with spirituality. But let's face it, it's an advertising medium. And advertising means even if it is transitory, it is important. It is something you not only want, but need. How did you begin to make that connection to spirituality after dealing in the media, which possibly I misunderstand, but seem to be preaching, if not materialism, need, want, get, right now, here, physical?
Well, I don't think it matters what job you're in. It's up to you to find the love in what you're doing. I think, in fact, that's the challenge when we come here, that are we going to remember who we are? Are we going to remember that everyone is love? Are we going to look for the love in other people? Or are we going to look for something else? So, I mean, I think that my challenge in working in the entertainment business was the same as anybody has in a challenge in any other job, to find what was good about the job, to find what was good about the people I was with, to find what I was learning from being in that job. I got that job when I had almost become homeless. And I had almost become homeless from having a philosophy that blamed everyone else for my problems. And I reached the bottom in a one-room apartment in California. It was roach-infested, and I knew I couldn't get any lower except to be homeless. And so I said to myself, my philosophy surely is not working so far, so I better jolly well find a different philosophy. And then I started to say that I would take responsibility. I was the one who made the choices. They got me almost homeless. Nobody else had made those choices for me. So I started taking responsibility for my choices, and at the same time, one of the things I took responsibility for was this gift I had of communicating with spirit. And so I sat down, and I didn't feel like a prayer at the time when I was saying it, but in hindsight, I see that it was a prayer. I said I wanted to honor the gift I had. I wanted to share the ideas that I heard through this gift. I wanted to share them with others, but I needed a job to support me while I did. And 3 weeks later, I had the job that I had for the next 18 years working for this man who's an entertainment executive. And granted, I couldn't write during the day, but the job, and I didn't even earn any money from the writing, but the money started pouring in from this job. So it's like the universe said to me, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go. And the job was everything that I needed to be, because everyone who I faced in this job was showing me the growth that I needed to find for my own path. I think we live in a house of mirrors where everyone we come up against is telling us something about ourselves. And if we don't like what we see in the people around us, it's not about them changing. It's about us seeing what needs to change within ourselves. So I feel that my job in the entertainment business was a great blessing in my life, and I thank God every day that I had it, because it was exactly what I needed. I do believe that we always have exactly what we need in our lives, the people in front of us that we need to deal with in one way or another. And it's always about a benevolent universe showing us what it is in ourselves that needs to expand or grow, or that we need to look at within ourselves.
Now, how would you relate this spirituality to aging? That's the focus we're on in this show. Do you believe people become more spiritual as they age, or only if they allow themselves to? Is what we would consider aging, by we I mean people who look at an outer layer at the body, would consider aging, is that simply becoming more spiritual or less spiritual? How do these things relate?
I just think they're so personal, Harriet. I'm not sure. I mean, I know a lot of people who are my age and older, senior citizens, who have no spiritual inclination whatsoever, and I know plenty of others who have grown spiritually. And I don't think that it's a matter of one being good or bad or wrong or right. I think it has to do with each path being individual. Some people just don't have an interest in that, don't have an inclination to go in that direction, because there are other issues that are more important. I mean, I believe we all come here to deal with the issues that we planned before we get here, and we believe that the issues we give ourselves are what we need and what we need to face and how we need to grow. And if it isn't about thinking about spirituality, then they're growing in other ways, and they're growing in ways that are important for them to grow. So I don't ever think that, I think, for instance, that probably those who are most attuned with their own spirituality are infants, because they don't know anything except the wonderful love they see, and wherever they look, they see love. Their love is so unconditional. I mean, they are the pure heart of God right there in front of us. And then they stay here for a while, and they begin to doubt themselves because the grown-ups or the parents don't have that same complete love for everything that comes into their life. So, I mean, I think that it's, we are energy, and energy expands in whatever direction you take it. You can decide to grow in one direction or another direction, but I don't think the soul within those people is taking a wrong direction. It's just going in the direction they need to go in. And if you go in a direction that you don't call spirituality, that doesn't mean your heart isn't growing. It just means you don't give it a label of being this or that. I mean, I know plenty of people. One of the people I knew in California didn't agree with any of the ideas I had, but he lived all the ideas. So his life was an example of someone living a spiritual life, although I know he would not call himself spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible? Some people have suggested this. I don't know. I don't know as anybody knows. That when somebody is, how can I say, is in Alzheimer's, final stages, they are not aware of the world around us in the way you or I might be. Might they be living in a spiritual universe, preparing them for death?
I suppose they could be. I mean, I don't know that any of us really know, but I do know this, or I do believe this. I believe that the soul is always has that person where they need to be, and I don't think we can ever really truly understand why people go through certain experiences, because we don't know the history of their soul. We don't know what maybe they had a past lifetime where they needed to live a certain thing this lifetime for some growth that they needed to live. So we can't really make a judgment about whether that's happening or not, but it's, I'm sure that if the soul believed that that would help that person to find more depth within themselves, then they would choose to live it.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about spirituality. How might that be different than religion?
Well, I think religion is a set of beliefs, and spirituality is a feeling. But if you love your beliefs, you are feeling your spirit within. I have a philosophy that I don't really believe that we take our beliefs with us when we leave here. I think we take the love we found from having our beliefs. So I'm very loose when it comes to who belongs to what religion or what. I mean, if you're finding love in your religion, then you're in the right place. But if you aren't finding love in your religion, you have to ask yourself, well, why am I still here if it's not bringing me love? For heaven's sakes, go where you feel loved. Go where you feel the love. Go where the place is welcoming to all, where everyone is considered equal and equally important, and find a place that does bring you love. But if you're finding love where you are, how could it be wrong?
Mm-hmm. How would somebody know when they're finding a place where love is enveloping them? How would you know such a thing?
Well, how do you feel when you're there? I think your heart tells you everything. How do you feel when you are around certain people, you feel good and happy to be with them because you feel the love that is going on between the two of you, and with other people you don't feel that connection. So go mm-hmm. where you feel the connection of this of loving hearts. I mean, this is I believe our feelings guide us in every moment of our life. We don't always honor those feelings, but they're still there guiding us. And I think that's our soul, and I think that's our spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Our country is going through a rough economic time. For some people, a hard physical time. In a way, everything they had, like you were discussing before, has been taken away from them. Some people have lost their house, they've lost their job, they've lost their financial security. Some people, millions of people. Do you think that has made our country more spiritual or just more angry?
Well, I think
do you have any feel on that?
In general, I don't really know. I think individually it all depends on how you deal with something. You know, I don't really believe it's what happens to us in our lives that make a difference. It's how we deal with what happens. And we have a choice when things happen. We can either feel bitter and angry and resentful about it, or we can look for what's good about it and what it's teaching us and how we're growing. How our heart is growing, or something is growing within us that we need to understand. And I do trust every soul who has gone through this experience. I trust that their soul believes that in somehow, some way, it is needed for their evolution to go through this and to experience it. And so it's up to each individual. I mean, we all have things happen to us in our lives that we don't expect. We all have what the world would call bad things happen to us. And we can't control that. The only thing we can control is how we deal with it and how we face it. And we can either succumb or we can let it build character and help us to face future challenges. Mm-hmm. So I believe that it's all perfect. Everything is happening the way it needs to happen. And I'm sure that some people have found more spirituality because, after all, when you lose everything in the illusion of the picture of life, sometimes that forces you to look within to what's really important, your own self and your beliefs about life and all that.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I am a caregiver for an older person, possibly somebody who has some degree of dementia, how can spirituality enter into the things I'm doing?
Well,
or would that not be a significant matter one way or another?
I think if you're being a loving towards somebody else, that's spirituality in its most base element. helping other people and giving your love and tending and caring. I mean, I think that's, and I think that whatever you give to other people, you give to yourself, because everyone is you. I think we are all energy, and that we are all, you know, growing, and whatever I give to you, I believe that I'm telling the universe what I want back. And so whatever I have, however I express love in my heart, whether it's toward people who are terminally ill, or whether it's towards your family, or whether it's towards people you work with, you are telling the universe what you want to receive back. And if you believe that you want to receive kindness back, then you need to give kindness. And I think it takes a special kind of person who can do this. I think it's they are amazing people, those who devote themselves to helping other people who can't take care of themselves.
Can you give an example of somebody who you believe gave kindness, possibly as a caregiver or in some other manner, some other milieu, and you believe received that kindness in return?
You mean where I gave kindness and I got kindness back? Is that what you're asking?
Possibly, if you believe that's happened to you, where you have seen that happen, if it has happened to you, fantastic.
Yes, certainly. In fact, it relates to one of my chapters in the book about what happens if I live without integrity. Because everything in my book, the What Happens If I book, I have experienced, or when I was writing the chapter, I was going through something in my life that needed to be looked at, and then was sort of answering my question. And so I think that integrity has a lot to do with how we cope with the people we come up against in our lives, and how we deal with that depends on how we progress. And I had somebody in my life who I was working for. She was my boss, and I would go home every night after work, and I would spend all my time complaining about this woman. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. Why can't she be more like this? Why can't she be more like that? And although I never said anything in front of her, and I never talked about her behind her back with other people, she could feel how I was thinking. She responded, and it was very cool. And I began to get more and more uncomfortable in the job, but I didn't want to lose the job, and I needed the job. So I went home and said I'm going to sort of experiment with myself and change my attitude towards this woman. So I started writing down all the qualities that I admired in her instead of all the qualities that I hated in her, and started thinking of what she was good at in her job and what she did well. And I kept repeating that over and over again, like I had done the negative before, in the same way, the pattern of repeating it over and over again. So I started repeating the positive over and over again. And although I never said anything to her, and I never said anything to anybody else, she could feel this change in attitude, and it transformed the entire relationship. So the fact that I changed my attitude from criticism to kindness transformed the whole relationship. And I believe that's because our feelings, you can't hide your feelings from other people. They can feel. Feelings aren't hideable. Matter can't perform the task of separation. So people always feel what we're thinking. They may not express what they're feeling in us, but they feel it nevertheless. And I think that's a perfect example of how it had to be the change within me to change the relationship. It wasn't about changing this woman. It was about me finding what I needed to change within myself that would help to transform this relationship. And she responded immediately.
If somebody is a caregiver for an older person who can be, to put it politely, cantankerous, which I'm sure many people of all ages can, if they begin to see the love in this person and the good in this person, will that make a difference in how they handle this situation?
I think it will. I think it will make a difference in how the person responds, too. Definitely. And you know what? If this person is sending only love to this person, and the other person is not sending love back, it won't bother the person, because we have this aura around us that represents everything that we're putting out into the world. And so, therefore, if we are putting out kindness and unkindness comes back, it doesn't impact our heart. We will notice it, and we'll say, "Oh, well, that wasn't a very kind remark," but it won't feel, you know, that gut feeling you feel inside when someone is rude to you and you really feel it. You won't feel it because you only feel what you have given out to other people. We have this aura, and that unkindness might come back to the nurse, but it would sort of bounce off her aura and not impact her heart, because her aura is one of love, even if the other person is not one of love. And what would probably happen in that situation is that she would move on to somebody else who was more reflective of her energy, and somebody else would come to this older person who was more reflective of her energy, because we're always finding our mirrors wherever we go. We don't have to strive to change our mirrors or strive to change our friends and relationships. We just have to be the person we want other people to be, and if they aren't that person, they move on to somebody else, and we move on to the person who reflects us.
Betsy, thank you very much for being a guest on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. It was delightful to talk to you, Harriet.
As you probably have become well aware through rough experience or through somebody else's rough experience who told you about it, one of the most stressful things known to anybody is bringing an older person into the emergency room. For reasons I don't possibly understand, and maybe my guests can help us with this, when an older person gets into an emergency room, they can become very agitated, very upset with their environment, seem to be in worse shape than they were when they arrived, and everything just seems to tumble downhill. Kim Kinder is a nurse practitioner at a ER for seniors, which is arranged by University Hospital in its Shaker Heights facility. Kim, maybe you can help explain some of this. Why is an ER, obviously an ER is very difficult on anybody, but why is an ER so particularly difficult on an older person?
Well, it's because of the activity that's going on in the ED. There is so much in and out, so many different procedures that we do in the emergency room, and so much visitors. We're coming in to do tests. We are, they're seeing the physicians, they're seeing the nurses, and along with nurse practitioners, that they have a lot of confusion that's going on. And a lot of times when the family bring them in, they're bringing them in for dementia or other chronically or acute illnesses that they have, that it just adds on to their illnesses, and then we add on more to what's going on in their brains at the time.
Now, how is your ER different? First off, let me begin to understand some of these things. Does everybody who is over 65 who comes into your ER at your facility automatically go to a senior ER, or how does that work? If somebody's in a car accident, and do you check their driver's license, and if they're over 65, they automatically go to the senior ER? How does that work for you?
Well, our ED, our senior ED, is within our emergency room, so we see patients of all adult ages. So our senior ED is within the emergency room that we have downstairs. So if you are, per se, like you said, in a car accident, if you are in an emergency situation, then we are not going to take you through our emergency room senior ED. We're going to treat you because you're an emergency situation that you need to be triaged through that first. We are taking a senior ED patients that are 65 and older and that are not critically ill. If you come in with chest pain, or you know that you are having chest pain and it's active, we're going to go ahead and treat the critically, you know, the critically ill piece. But we have patients that come in through our senior ED that are triaged through the senior 65 and older, that we see you 30 minutes, within the first 30 minutes, and do an assessment both at Richmond and Bedford Hospital in the UH system, that we go ahead and see you, and we have you assessed by our ED doctor, me, the geriatric nurse practitioner, and I also have a social worker that is stationed in the ED.
Mm-hmm. What if somebody is 65 and they're in robust health, they're playing tennis, they fell and broke their arm, they come in, they say, I'm not going to the senior ER, don't bother me, just set my arm.
We still give you the option. We still give you the option. We will see you. We'll set your arm for you. We will send a social worker in, let them know about the senior ED, that they have options, because a lot of times family members, you know, want to know about the senior ED. I have people that call in the community asking for the information. A lot of times we like to let the person that comes in healthy, play tennis, I would just want my arm set and let me go and go on about my business. We will send the social worker in, give them the option. We are here for, it's a special service. We have a senior ED inside of our ER. We want to let you know if there's any special needs that you have met, know of anybody that has any special needs. They take the information, they bank it in their head somewhere. They may not need it this visit, but they may need it or know of somebody that does. So that is why we at least introduce it. It's a 2 minutes out of their day spiel why they're waiting, and then they go on.
In other words, I come in, I've been playing tennis, or I fell off my bike. There's one Supreme Court justice, almost 80, I think. He fell off his bike. He broke his arm. He comes into the ER. You will bring somebody in, and they will say, okay, if you're interested, you have this option. It's up to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because we want to let them know that, you know, our population, you know, with the baby boomers aging every day and more of them, we have our population's been going to grow 15% to 20% daily for a nationwide for seniors. We want to at least let them know that the option's out there, and that there's more coming with the senior EDs out, you know, in the nationwide. So we want them to let them know that there is services that we do offer.
Okay, how would the senior ED be different? I mean, I understand if somebody's critically ill, they were in an accident and they're bleeding, you're going to deal with that just like you would deal with anybody, no matter what their age. If that's not the case, if there may be somebody who has some dementia, how is this ER different than any other?
Well, of course, like I said, we're going to treat the emergency. Most likely that patient's going to be admitted because it was an emergency. They got into a car accident, and they're going to need further treatment to be hospitalized. So they would be admitted onto our ACE unit, which is our acute care unit, which they would be followed by our me, the nurse practitioner, along with their primary care physician and along with a social worker that is on the floor. We do IDT rounds on them daily. Also, we do ACE rounds on them to help plan for discharge, community services. If they need further home services or nursing home or where they're going to be discharged, rehab facilities, we start the discharge and plan of care services when we have senior EDs come into the emergency room.
In other words, you're integrating all of these different things.
Yes. Our senior ED has, physicians, geriatric trained nurse practitioner. We even have a geriatrician on staff. We have our private doctors. We have nurses that are trained, pharmacists, social worker for the ED. We have our rehab services. And then if they stay in the emergency room, we will give them services through a social worker, through me if they need medical advice to go to nursing home or back into the community along with a physician. If they are admitted, then we will bring them up on the floor, do the geriatrician, me, primary care physician, and work through our interdisciplinary team on rounds and do daily meetings to help with their plan of care and discharges.
Okay, now, the major, major question, not to try to trip you up, but it's a question that has to be asked.
All right.
I'll give you an example to best explain it. You have a case of somebody who's not totally in their own consciousness, but has some dementia. They have a caregiver. That caregiver is getting kind of worn. They don't want to eat that day. They maybe are a little nauseous, vomiting. They seem to have a fever. They bring this person into the ER. Now, there's a decent chance that what they need instead is somebody to see them in the home or just someone to sit with the caregiver and understand this will be over. You know, they maybe have a little cold, fever, whatever. The ER may not be the best place for them at that point, and it may only confuse matters more. How do you try to keep people out of the ER? Because in a lot of cases, that's the best way to handle the situation.
Well, we have our social worker, which does take community calls. She gets quite a few of those community calls because we are now, by word-of-mouth advertisement, that person that comes in with just a broken hand, we get a lot of referrals in the community because we have a social worker or myself that they know we exist, and they are at that point where, what do I do? I need respite care, or I don't know what to do. Do I bring them in? Because a lot of elderly are using ERs as doctors, and or the caregiver's
drain. Well, that's the type of thing I'm talking about.
Exactly. I knew where you were going with that. Or they're getting caregiver strain, where the caregiver just doesn't. They're just so at their the last end, where they don't know what to do. So we have, you know, made referrals for home care visits out of the emergency room. We have referred them to primary care physicians. We are looking at other options at this point in time, like for respite care. You know, it's not admitting a patient into a nursing home for a full-time stay or anything, but people need breaks. My geriatrician's looking into that. So there is options out there, but it's sometimes needing that community call in from the family to the facility because they know we exist. And we, like I said, they do come into the emergency room, and we do home care referrals from there to have somebody come into the home. You do not always have to be admitted to get help.
In other words, I mean, this sounds like a pretty innovative service. I have never heard of something like this. No, I mean, I haven't. If I'm a caregiver and, well, this person seems to be having a bad day, and I'm not quite sure, are they having a bad day, or am I just having a bad day and thinking things are worse than they are? I can call into your ER and get some advice or help, or somebody may come to the house. Do I understand that correctly, or don't I?
Well, like I said, we have the community that do call in to my social worker, and then she can give some advice on what to do, and she's done that for me, community calls. And then, like I said, that if you do make the ER visit, that we have done home care referrals from there. And also you have to remember, that elderly get sick quicker than anybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It could be a bad day that you're thinking they're having, and they may not be just having a bad day.
Mm-hmm. It may be something more serious.
Yes. I mean, so they're running a little bit of a fever or a temp, and, you know, a slight fever for us may be something that's detrimental to them. Or, you know, that if they don't feel like eating that one meal, then that may be fine. But if it goes on for, you know, a day, then that might be something that's different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one other $64,000 question to go back a few years. I'm certain you've been asked this before. Now, ERs are often, I don't know about your particular ER, I couldn't comment on that, but I know often people who do not have insurance or do not have a private doctor, whatever their problem, they come to the ER with things that might be better handled in the home or in a doctor's office. I mean, infection of some type, things of that nature. And they're coming in, makes the ER a particularly hectic place. Not that it's their fault, they're doing what they can. Do you think Obamacare, which I shouldn't say Obamacare, that's too politically loaded, the Health Care Act, which should be going into effect in January, which is designed to get more people insurance, might that cut down on the number of people coming into the ER and make things easier for everybody, seniors included?
I really don't know where that's going to go. I mean, it's supposed to make things better. So, I mean, I think it's a wait and see with that. It's that we're supposed to, with the reform, it's supposed to help with the insurance for people. So that's where I think we need to wait and see how it's supposed to give us a whole, you know, everybody's supposed to be insured with that.
Mm-hmm.
So... Mm-hmm.
It is at this point an unknown.
Yeah, it is very much so an unknown. It's like a wait and see.
I understand. Now, I will let you end. You've done a fantastic job of explaining these things. I will let you end. You have a story that I understand you can't give names. That's not relevant. Or a composite story. In other words, we've had many patients with this that made you really believe the senior ER was helping people, was more than just something that sounds like a good idea, but something that was really working.
Yes, I think that in general, for the senior ED, that we are taking care of the geriatric patients here that need it. I see it on more than just one or two occasions with my move from to Bedford, Ohio. We are taking care of the geriatric patients, and more than just overall care, we are taking care of the holistic patient here, and that includes on safety issues with the geriatric population. So I believe that we do that because we have to make sure that patients are safe here also, and I think that we do that with the families too. So we take on the caregiver and the patient also. So we take the family and the patients, and I think that's a good thing.
Kim, thank you very, very much for being our guest. And I know I've listened and learned a great deal, and I hope others have too. This is Harriet Tramer for Reaching for the Gold. We're on every other Tuesday afternoon at this time, and I hope you will join us. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wouldn't you know? Damn, it's hard.